the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell, the founder of College Football Country, CFBCountry.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for downloading and subscribing. If you are new to the podcast, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget, the rules to rate and review the podcast are as such. You got to leave a 5-star review. And if you do, your name has to be your favorite college football player of all time, or the most creative name you can think of, the most random college football player ever. Leaders in the clubhouse this week, we had Jyrie Cheeseman. We also had Chris Gamble. We also had Ken Oxendine. We also had, I need one that's not a Hokie. What do we have here? How about we go Rhett Bomar, former Oklahoma quarterback. So you guys are really coming in strong with these. We got about 30 more to go, 35 more to go before I will give out that $25 Amazon gift card. So make sure you guys are leaving those reviews on Apple, on Stitcher, on Google Play, wherever you may be downloading the podcast. Today's episode, we are going to talk top 10, the JP top 10, as I will do every single Monday going forward. And what a weekend it was. I was at a bachelor party, okay, so might have watched a little less football than I normally do. Shout out to Rossi Three Stacks, if you guys are fans of the show. You know Rossi Three Stacks. It was his bachelor party down there in Myrtle Beach, or Squirtle Beach, as we like to call it from time to time. Had some great golf. Rossi played the round of his life, 2-under on Saturday as a team. I think Ross was 2-under by himself, so give it up for Big Rossi Three Stacks. He'll be back on the podcast in all his glory on Friday. But now we get into the top 10 for this week. Top 10 resumes in college football, the best playoff resumes to this point. And we are basically halfway through the season now. Some teams have played 6 games. You got about a half dozen teams who are now bowl eligible. You also have plenty of teams getting to that 5-win mark this week. So we're inching closer to that halfway point. And with that in mind, we are less than a month away from the very first release of the playoff rankings. And we finally have, it feels like, enough information to start to really get an idea of who is a legitimate threat to make the playoff. Who's a contender? Who's a pretender? Now, there's probably about 15 teams right now who I think are still in the mix. And that number will start to dwindle as we get further down the road. A couple big ones coming up this weekend that will help determine that as well. I'm looking at you guys, Washington and Oregon. So on to the top 10, and we'll start with my number 10 team, and this is a first-time appearance for this team in the top 10 this season, the Florida Gators. They get a 27-19 win at home against LSU. Magnificent win, monumental win for Dan Mullen and the Florida Gators. Now, I'm not necessarily buying that Florida is a real threat to Georgia in the SEC East. I think that at best they are the second team in the SEC East. Kentucky losing to Texas A&M, I think, makes this a pretty good debate between Florida and Kentucky. You talk about Florida on that resume right now. They have 2 good wins, and they have 1 good loss. That loss to Kentucky is a good loss. Even though the Wildcats dropped one this weekend, they're still a 5-1 team. Florida can be proud to say that it lost to Kentucky. That's not an embarrassing loss like it might be in most years to the Wildcats. So the loss is good, and the wins are good as well. They get that Mississippi State win. Mississippi State bounced back and beat Auburn this week, so that gives the Gators a little bit of a leg up getting that win over Mississippi State. And, of course, knocking off LSU, who you could have argued had the best resume in college football prior to Saturday. So a huge win for the Gators, who did what they had to do. They ran the football. They did not throw it particularly well. Felipe Franks was, I believe, 12 of 27, 161 yards. He is, let's just call it limited, but Dan Mullen has done just a great job at managing Franks and getting him in positions to succeed. One thing that Mullen said back in the spring was, you know, we're going to cater this offense to whatever Franks does well. It's not going to be the offense I ran with Dak Prescott. It's not going to be the offense I ran with Nick Fitzgerald. It's going to be the offense I run with Felipe Franks, and we're going to try to maximize his strengths and eliminate his weaknesses as much as possible. That's basically what Florida's doing. I mean, Felipe Franks is certainly not going to win a lot of games for them, but as long as he can avoid losing them, I think that's the big thing. Of course, they got the trick play late, the throwback pass to Felipe Franks that helped set up that game-winning touchdown. That was a big deal. So Dan Mullen is, he's just nickeling and diming his way through the season so far, and the Gators have played really well for the most part. I mean, this is a team that I actually liked, even coming off of that Kentucky loss. I kind of thought that over the next few weeks, Florida showed me that they've got some life, and there's some life in that program. And if Dan Mullen can just get this team to 8-9 wins this season, that's a building block for success moving forward. And right now they're sitting at 5-1. They go to Vanderbilt this Saturday, then a bye, and then Georgia. Let's say they're sitting at 6-2 going into November. That November schedule is Missouri, South Carolina, Idaho, Florida State. There's probably 3 wins, if not 4, in that stretch. It's not crazy to think Florida could get to 10. I think their ceiling is 10 wins right now. Let's call it 9-3 at this point. Be a heck of a year for the Florida Gators. So I got them at number 10 right now. Number 9, Oklahoma. Now, I'm dropping Oklahoma down. I had the Sooners in the top 6 or 7 last week, dropping them down a couple spots. Look, this was a close loss to a Texas team that's getting better and better. I thought about dropping Oklahoma all the way out, but to be honest with you, I didn't see a team outside of my top 10 that I really thought deserved to be ranked ahead of the Sooners right now. They've dominated a lot of teams on their schedule. Texas is proving itself to be a legitimate contender, and I'm not going to drop Oklahoma that far for losing by 3. I know the defense struggled. They fire Mike Stoops on Sunday night. They've got to fix that defense. If Oklahoma had anything on defense resembling a team that could keep somebody under 40 points, this team would be a national championship contender. I never truly bought into the idea that Oklahoma could win the national title because I don't think that they're going to be able to slow down somebody like Alabama. I just think if they got into a track meet with a team like Alabama, the Crimson Tide will be able to get at least a few stops against Kyler Murray. And I just don't see that happening for Alabama. I don't think that they're going to have any trouble scoring on that Oklahoma defense. So with that in mind, I never thought the Sooners were going to be a legit national championship contender. I do still think they can make the playoff. I think they can absolutely win the Big 12. Texas would have to lose 2 games in the Big 12 to drop behind Oklahoma in the standings. But remember, it's just a round robin. All you got to do is finish first or second in the conference, and you're into the conference championship game. So Oklahoma not out of it by any stretch. If the Sooners win out, they're still making the Big 12 championship game. And if that's the case, they'll get a chance to either rematch Texas or maybe take on someone like West Virginia. So the Big 12 starting to take a little bit more shape. Kyler Murray was outstanding in this game. He put up 396 yards, 5 touchdowns. Look, Oklahoma's playoff chances dropped dramatically. ESPN does a projection every week. They had Oklahoma at 34% going into Saturday, likelihood to make the playoff. Now that chance is down to 14. So, yes, the playoff chances have dropped for Oklahoma, but they control their own destiny. Kyler Murray has been outstanding, almost 400 yards. He, of course, had 5 touchdowns, and that touchdown run that tied the game at 45 late in the fourth quarter could have been a Heisman moment for Kyler Murray. If his defense could have gotten literally a stop, if that defense could have just stopped Texas one time, kept them from getting that field goal into field goal range, which the Longhorns marched right down the field and did, Kyler Murray would have had his Heisman moment. And I thought at the time, those are the types of plays that Tua Tagovailoa is not going to have a chance to make. And Tua is lighting it up. I'll talk about Lua when we get to Alabama. But Kyler Murray playing in these close battles, having to make plays to win the game with all the eyes on him, I think that matters when it comes to the Heisman race. And I actually still think that Kyler Murray added to his Heisman resume on Saturday. I don't think that losing to Texas really takes him that much out of the race. I think Tua certainly is the leader in the clubhouse right now, but I think that Kyler Murray is absolutely capable of getting back into this race, given what Oklahoma still has on its schedule. Again, you're talking about West Virginia end of the season, TCU, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, and then, of course, whoever they end up rematching in the Big 12 title game. If Oklahoma's in some close games and Kyler can win them for Oklahoma and make plays like he did on Saturday, I think he's still a candidate for the Heisman. Number 8 is Penn State. Now, Penn State was on a bye. Don't have a lot to talk about with the Nittany Lions, but a 1-point loss to my number 1, 2, or 3 team. I'm not going to reveal it just yet, but a top 3 team in my ranking. I can't really rank this team much lower than 8. I mean, I think 8 is a pretty appropriate spot for the Nittany Lions. Now, as far as their wins are concerned, they don't have a marquee win quite yet. They'll have a chance in the coming weeks to do so. Of course, they barely scraped by Appalachian State, who is playing very good football right now. And then Pittsburgh in week 2, Penn State won 51-6. They've blown out every team on their schedule after the Appalachian State game. 1-point loss then to Ohio State. I think this team still belongs in the top 10. And they've got a road ahead of them with Michigan State, Indiana, Iowa. They should get to 7-1 going on the road to Michigan and then Wisconsin at home. So that two-game stretch in early November is going to define Penn State's season. And I think that Trace McSorley is another guy who's kind of sitting on the periphery of the Heisman discussion, not really being talked about much right now, certainly not after losing to Ohio State. I think he could get back into the mix with Michigan and Wisconsin being big games. The problem for Penn State right now is I don't know that I see Ohio State dropping two games down the stretch, and they would need Ohio State to lose twice to get back into the discussion for the Big Ten East title and make it to that Big Ten championship game. But we could very well be looking at an 11-1 Penn State team with at least a case, depending on how everything else shakes out, at least a case to be in that playoff discussion. Number 7, this is where I get to Texas. Texas wins at 48-45 in Dallas over Oklahoma. There may not be a better win in all of college football this season than that one. Beating Oklahoma, one of the best offenses in college football. I know the defense is rough, but 48-45, that to me is as impressive of a win as any team has had in college football this season, period. And Florida over LSU was another one that was right up there with them, but I would give Texas that distinction. So beating Oklahoma is huge. Beating Kyler Murray is huge. And look, this was Herman's 9th win in 13 tries as an underdog. This was outstanding from Texas. This is what Tom Herman does, and Texas made the right move with Tom Herman. I questioned a few weeks ago if Texas would rather have Justin Fuente or Tom Herman. Now, I said I would rather have Fuente, and I'm not sure that I would change my mind at this point. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. I think that Tom Herman now is starting to finally build momentum at Texas. You talk about them getting 3 ranked wins already this season, coming by a combined 41 points. The Longhorns are getting better. Tom Herman has recruited at a high level. He's recruited at an even higher level than Charlie Strong. And this is now the moment where Texas can capitalize on that win. Now, is Texas back? That's the thing. Is Texas back? The answer is no. Okay, this is the same thing I say about Miami. Everybody thinks I like to hate Miami. I don't hate Miami. I'm just telling you that when we start to ask if teams are back, we have to define what back is. Where was the program before, and where is the program now? Okay, we talk about Miami, we talk about Texas and USC. Okay, even you could throw Notre Dame in that mix. When those teams were at their height, they were competing for and winning national titles. They were winning conference championships year after year. Miami hasn't won an ACC championship ever. Texas hasn't won a Big 12 title in almost a decade. This is very, very different than the Texas we knew 10 years ago plus. Back in the Vince Young, Colt McCoy days, Major Applewhite, Chris Sims, even want to go back that far. The program has to get to that point again. They have to win a Big 12 championship before I'm willing to say they're back. At least get there. And they have a chance now. They certainly have a chance. They're not back. Okay, they've competed with Oklahoma in years past, even when they've had bad teams. This is a rivalry game where no matter what the records are, it's most likely going to be a close game. In all honesty, some of the years where it's been the biggest blowout in the Red River Shootout have been when both teams were inside the top 10. So this is game all in itself is not an indictment on Oklahoma or Texas. I'm not willing to say that Texas is back yet, but I do see a schedule in front of them with some opportunities to pick up some wins. Baylor and Oklahoma State over the next 3 weeks, they have a bye sandwiched in the middle. I think they win both of those games, get to 7-1. Now you have a 7-1 Texas hosting West Virginia. That smells like college game day to me. November 3rd, Longhorns and Mountaineers. If both of those teams win the next 2 games, which I think both of them will, you're talking about a massive game in early November. And if Texas beats West Virginia, they would almost certainly make it into the Big 12 championship game. They would have Texas Tech, Iowa State, and Kansas over the last 3 weeks. They'd have to lose 2 of those games to even have a chance to miss the Big 12 title game. And they still might get in with 2 losses. So Texas is in a great spot right now. Huge win for them over the Sooners. Tom Herman doing a fantastic job. I love what Texas is building, and I think they're only going to get better. Number 6 is Clemson, the Clemson Tigers. I bump them back into the top 10. I vault them up because I was waiting. I was waiting all year. I knew the potential. Okay, I didn't think that Clemson was outside the top 10 because they didn't have the talent. I just needed to see them actually play up to their potential just once. Just one time. Show me what you're capable of. Throw that knockout blow, and they threw that knockout blow. They threw that haymaker against Wake Forest on Saturday, 63-3 over a Wake Forest team that can't stop anybody, okay, but had an offense that was scoring points against just about anybody it played. Even with a true freshman in Sam Hartman, this offense was moving the football. Clemson's defense comes in and shuts down Wake Forest, holds them to 3 points, keeps them out of the end zone. And another reason why I'm bumping Clemson back into that top 10, because remember, this is based off of resumes, and a blowout win over Wake Forest isn't a huge resume builder. Texas A&M beating Kentucky on Saturday night makes that win for Clemson look a little bit better. This was A&M's first big win. So for Clemson, that now strengthens their schedule, and it's enough for me to put Clemson back into the top 10 at number 6. They're undefeated. They had 3 running backs with 10 carries over 100 yards on Saturday. They've got so many different weapons. Trevor Lawrence played a very efficient football game, completed a high level of passes. He is starting to be more comfortable. If he can just stay healthy, that's going to be the big concern for them. But I like Clemson. Now that I've seen them play up to their potential one time this season, the Georgia Tech game was close, but finally we saw an A game from Clemson, and that's huge. Don't sleep on NC State. Do not sleep on NC State in a few weeks. The Wolfpack are going to be ready for that game. And Clemson, while they look great on Saturday, has been very up and down all year long. Number 5 is West Virginia. They had a little bit of a rough one on Saturday against Kansas. They kind of let the Jayhawks hang around a little more than you want to, but they got the win, and that's what's important. That was a game that reeked of a letdown. West Virginia has a pretty easy schedule in November. You have to think that the Mountaineers are on a little bit of autopilot right now. And Kansas is a better football team than people expected going into the season. 38-22 is the final score. The thing about West Virginia is they haven't had that chance to make you say, wow. They haven't had that game yet that just jumps off the page at you. Yeah, they beat Tennessee by 26. That's great. Yeah, I know they beat Kansas State. That's great, too. Yeah, I know they beat Texas Tech by 8. None of those games are wow games. And in 3 weeks or 4 weeks, they're going to play Texas, like I mentioned earlier, and that's going to be that chance. As long as the Longhorns are 7-1, which I think they will be, that's the chance for West Virginia to truly announce its presence on the national stage. I've got them at number 5 right now because while they haven't had that wow game, they also haven't had a stinker either. And every team below them has had a stinker of a game. You talk about Clemson, of course, Syracuse game, of course, Texas losing to Maryland, Penn State with Appalachian State, Oklahoma losing a game, and the Army game. So those teams right behind West Virginia have played poorly in games, while West Virginia hasn't had just an absolute stinker. Even Kansas, which is as close as you're going to get on this resume at this point, they won by 16. They were never really in doubt. So they didn't let an inferior opponent hang around and almost beat them. They just pretty much played Kansas and sleptwalked through the game and still won by 16. So I give West Virginia credit. Will Greer, not a great game for him. He had 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. West Virginia on autopilot until November. Talk to me when they play Texas on November 3rd, and we'll find out how good the Mountaineers really are. Number 4 is the Georgia Bulldogs, and Georgia pulled away from Vanderbilt, kind of a sloppy start to that game, but they ended up winning easily, 41-13. Georgia, another team that really doesn't have a wow game yet. It does help them that South Carolina got back into the top 25. Remember, South Carolina lost by 31 at home to the Bulldogs, but they picked up a nice win over Missouri at home on Saturday night. So gives Georgia's resume a little bit of a tick up because of that win. Georgia needs that quality win. And it's kind of funny if you look at Georgia and Alabama, who seem to be on a crash course for the SEC title game, and I'm trying to figure out what's the more likely scenario where the SEC gets two teams in. Of course, they're going to need some help from the other conferences. They're going to need teams to lose a game, certainly two in a couple cases, maybe even Notre Dame to lose. But just in terms of how could you have the strongest possible resumes between those two SEC programs, Alabama and Georgia, and it's gone back and forth because there was a point in time where I thought, well, Alabama should go undefeated and knock off Georgia and we want a one-loss Georgia. Or there's been other times where I say, well, Georgia should be the one to actually go 13-0, beat an undefeated Alabama in the SEC title game, and it's 13-0 Georgia, 12-1 Alabama. I go back and forth on that because these SEC games every week are continually turned the entire complexion of the conference on its head. I mean, you're talking about a team like Kentucky that was 5-0 but now loses to Texas A&M. So that Texas A&M win all of a sudden strengthens the SEC West a little bit, which of course is a big game for Alabama, a big win for the Crimson Tide that Georgia doesn't have on its schedule. But then you have Mississippi State, which was losing, and making Alabama's schedule look a little bit easier. Then Mississippi State turns around and beats Auburn. Now, Auburn is on Georgia's schedule as well, so that weakens Georgia's schedule while strengthening Alabama's a little bit because it makes Mississippi State look a little better. Although it's a bit of a wash because Auburn looked worse in the process as well. So it's very hard to get a read on which of these two schedules between Georgia and Alabama is actually the toughest. I would tend to lean Georgia because Georgia has a defining stretch coming up over the next few weeks of its schedule. They have four ranked games in a row. It is outrageous. They are going to take on LSU on the road, Florida at home, Kentucky on the road, and then Auburn. And I said Florida at home. Florida is going to be in Jacksonville. Auburn at home. So in the next four games, three of them against ranked teams, only one of them in Athens. If you're looking for a team that might get bit by the upset bug, it is Georgia. Georgia has that tough road. This could shake the college football landscape because now, let's think about what could happen. If Georgia were to lose a game in this stretch, but still win the SEC East at 11-1, and then they beat Alabama, now you've got one loss Georgia and one loss Alabama, I think that that would keep the Crimson Tide from the playoff. I think it's going to be enough. Assuming there is enough teams from the other Power 5 conferences who are undefeated or with one loss, I think Alabama would not make it in this year. I think last year was an outlier. I think that the Crimson Tide need to go undefeated unless Georgia is undefeated as well. Losing to an unbeaten Georgia might be acceptable in the eyes of the committee, whereas losing to a one-loss Georgia might just be enough. And we're talking hairs on this, okay? The margin is so thin, we're talking about splitting hairs. I think that Alabama needs an unbeaten Georgia in the SEC title game to prevent the chance that they miss the playoff even with a loss. It will be close either way, but they need all the help they can get from the Bulldogs. So I like Georgia at number four. Number three, Notre Dame. And they went into Blacksburg and they waxed the Hokies, 45-23. Now, there were a lot of missed opportunities from Virginia Tech in this game, which I will get into on Wednesday with Kyle Bailey. But for now, you have to be impressed with this Notre Dame team. You have to take the first three games of their season away. You have to take away the Michigan game. You have to take away the Ball State game. And you have to take away the Vanderbilt game. This last three-week stretch for Notre Dame, they have been a totally different team. And they've been a top-five team. They've been a top-three team. You talk about housing Wake Forest, which is exactly what Clemson did this weekend, and people seem to think they're a top-five team. You talk about housing Stanford. Of course, that win doesn't look quite as nice now because Stanford just got run out of the building against Utah. And then, of course, housing Virginia Tech. So this team is starting to at least have an identity offensively. Ian Book continues to play well. Missed a couple throws against the Hokies that he wishes he had back. But Dexter Williams is the guy that, while Ian Book gets a lot of the headlines, Dexter Williams has changed this offense as well. He's now averaging 170 yards, two touchdowns a game since he came back from suspension 2 weeks ago. So they have all sorts of weapons on offense. Defense is good, not great, but Notre Dame has earned the right to be a top three team at this point over the likes of Georgia and over the likes of West Virginia or Texas or anybody else that is right behind them nipping on their heels in that top 10. I mean, I think this Notre Dame team is very clearly one of the top four teams in college football right now. If we look down the road, could they make the playoff? It's going to be tight. An undefeated Notre Dame team probably going to get in. A one-loss Notre Dame team, I think, would probably be out. And here's what upsets me if you talk about the playoff, is the idea that because Notre Dame is not in a conference, that they somehow might have that held against them at the end of the season when going up against the Power 5 conference champions. We have a 4-team playoff, and we have five power conferences. If that's the case, and we're just going to automatically leave out one Power 5 conference champion every year regardless, why are we even giving conference champions an advantage anyway? Like, what's the point of that? Because you're not rewarding conference championships in any way. If you were, you would give every single team from a Power 5 conference that won a spot in the playoff. You can't do that because there's only four spots. So in that case, I'm just looking for the four best teams with the four best resumes, regardless of whether you're in the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the AFC North, it doesn't matter. Okay, that's just a label. Okay, that does nothing but determine who you play every week because you got to play the teams from your conference. Notre Dame plays a schedule that's every bit as tough as a Power 5 schedule. You look at what Clemson has to play. Notre Dame's schedule is just as hard, probably harder. I would think much harder, honestly, than Clemson's. So to me, this is a moot point trying to argue that Notre Dame, because they're not in a conference, doesn't belong in the college football playoff over the likes of somebody who comes out of a conference, a Power 5 conference. If Notre Dame has one loss, it's going to be tough for them. That's just reality. Also, while I'm very impressed with Notre Dame over the last few weeks, their resume is sneaky not that great, because Virginia Tech is unranked right now with a loss to Old Dominion. People are going to hold that against the Hokies. And now Stanford followed up that loss to Notre Dame with a blowout loss to Utah. They got murdered against the Utes. And, of course, they did barely get by Oregon. That counts as a win. But people are going to be skeptical of this Stanford team. And if Stanford stumbles down the stretch, all of a sudden Notre Dame doesn't have that quality win either. They may not have very many quality wins themselves. They don't have very many teams on this schedule who look like they could end the season ranked. They need Virginia Tech to keep winning. They need Virginia Tech badly to keep winning. They also need Stanford to turn it around, of course. Michigan will be a huge one as well. The Wolverines have a chance to contend in the Big Ten. Notre Dame needs that badly. So, sneaky bad resume right now. Not bad, but sneaky average resume for Notre Dame with, I think, a chance to get even worse. And that's what's going to hurt Notre Dame. They need those teams they've beaten already to have great years to give Notre Dame that strength of schedule boost it needs, because it won't be playing for a conference championship. And apparently that matters to some people. Number two is Alabama. Of course, Alabama still continues to dominate every single week. I have Ohio State at number one. I'm going to talk about these two right now and why I have the Buckeyes ahead of Alabama. Look, Alabama is the best team in football, period. If I was projecting out who I think the best teams are going forward, Alabama's number one. There's a major, major gap, and then there's everybody else. It's outrageous how good this Alabama team is. Tua has – there's nothing else you can say about what Tua has done for this offense to change anything. If you look at Nick Saban and the comments he made last week about the students not showing up for games, if you look at what he said to Maria Taylor earlier this year, some of the comments he made to the media about asking them to point out things that they are not doing well, people are kind of criticizing Nick Saban for being a grumpy old man. This is just Nick Saban at his peak, because he knows his team is better than it's ever been. And I think Nick Saban is really, really sensitive to the idea that this team is going to start to coast. This team's going to start to get complacent. He's looking around the country, and he's seeing every other team, no matter how talented they are, laying eggs in spots where it would seem like they could just show up and win. You talk about Clemson against Syracuse. You talk about Georgia kind of sleepwalking through a Tennessee game, although they did end up pulling away in that game. I mean, I'm looking at Oklahoma against Army. I'm looking at West Virginia against Kansas. There's all sorts of teams in the top 10 or 15 that lose games as favorites just because there's a lack of preparation, there's a lack of focus, a lack of attention to detail. And that's what happens with college kids. Nick Saban knows that, and he knows this team is so good. He's got to find ways to motivate this team, or just to, I think at this point it goes beyond motivation. And yes, he's probably said some things that he shouldn't have, certainly to Maria Taylor. But the idea is Nick Saban's just on edge. He knows this team is really good, and he doesn't want to give off the idea that he knows it. He does not want his team to know that he believes that they are as good as they truly are. He wants to continue to push this team, and he's going to continue to kill those kids in practice, because that's where the harder work goes into Alabama, is just in practice. The games are the easy part for the Crimson Tide. But, man, it's wild to see this team play. They're so dominant. But their resume doesn't stack up with Ohio State, because Ohio State has that road win against Penn State. I know it came by one. I know it was a comeback. Penn State had that game in hand until late, but I'm going to give Ohio State credit for going on the road and knocking off who, in my mind, is a top 10 team. Alabama will have a couple chances later this season to maybe do so, but as of right now, the Crimson Tide do not have the resume, the wins that Ohio State has, and I'm going to give the Buckeyes credit for that. LSU losing to Florida really hurts Alabama. The Tigers, they have a couple games between now and November 3rd when they take on Alabama that could be tricky. Of course, Georgia and Mississippi State. So LSU could very honestly be out of the top 20 by the time they host Alabama in 4 weeks. And then Mississippi State and Auburn are the next two games on Alabama's schedule that look remotely challenging. And Mississippi State has had trouble in several big spots earlier this season. And, of course, Auburn's offense has just come to a complete halt. So I don't know. I think Alabama cruises through this schedule. They're going to be 12-0. They're going to play for the national title. I think they're going to win the national title. But if I'm stacking up resumes side by side, I think Ohio State has a slight edge right now. It's close because Alabama's been so dominant, but until they do it against a team that is ranked, I mean, A&M finally gets back into the top 25. That does help Alabama strike the schedule a little bit, and they did take care of business against A&M. But the A&M win does look good now, 45-23. The Aggies get a big win over Kentucky in College Station. So, yeah, obviously Alabama's schedule improving a little bit from that standpoint. I'm going to put Ohio State 1. I know Alabama's the better football team, but I will say this. Ohio State's ceiling is higher than any other team other than Alabama. I think if Ohio State plays in its A game and you get a B game from Alabama, I think Ohio State has a shot. That's probably the best case scenario where I can envision Alabama losing a game. I think Georgia's right around there. I think Georgia's A game and Alabama's B game, I would put the Crimson Tide as about a 7-point favorite in that case. If you get Ohio State's A game and Alabama's B game, I think the Buckeyes could keep it within a field goal, maybe even win. That's the difference for me. And I like Georgia, but I think Ohio State has a little bit better athletes than the Crimson Tide. The thing about Alabama is they're going to overwhelm 95% of the teams that they play just because of the strength and the speed and the size. When they take on a team that is in their same kind of vicinity athletically, they have to execute. I think Alabama is going to have no trouble executing. But that's just the difference when you look at some of these games and you say, well, Alabama's just so far and away better than everybody. Yeah, to a point, but also it's just they're just overwhelming teams right now. If they play a team who's not overwhelmed, how does Alabama respond? How do they execute? One thing that you could maybe, if you're trying to find something to poke a hole in Alabama, it's how would they respond in a tight game late? How would the Crimson Tide fare if they are in a tied game or trailing in the fourth quarter? That's where we'll find out a lot more about Alabama. I know that they did it to Georgia a year ago in the national championship game, and they have that experience to draw on, but that was a year ago, and Alabama, if you are conditioned every week to blowing teams out and not even having to play the fourth quarter, A, are you in game shape? Are you in shape to go the full four quarters? That's a big question. And then B, how is your mind? How do you respond when it's been 14 weeks or whatever, and you haven't been challenged, and all of a sudden there's a team that's taking you to the wire? That matters. That affects teams psychologically. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing for Alabama, and that's why Nick Saban is trying to find whatever he can to keep Alabama on edge, to keep them pushing, to keep driving to make them better. That's what I see from them. But I got Ohio State number one. Don't freak out. Alabama's the best team in football. Ohio State has the best resume. It's close, and we're probably going to see Alabama take over that number one spot maybe in a few weeks, unless LSU keeps losing. In that case, it might be a while for the Crimson Tide. But I got my money on the Tide to win the title. I got Ohio State at number one. Nice game for the Buckeyes. Dwayne Haskins, shout out to him. 6 touchdowns, 1 short of the Big Ten record. Nice job, Ohio State. O-H-I-O. They're number one. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure to download and subscribe to the podcast, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, wherever you find them, and leave that rating and review. I'll be back on Wednesday to talk about ACC football with Kyle Bailey, as we do every week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Once again, this is the College Football Country Podcast. I'm Josh Parson.